You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are talking through a question that Ariana called in, actually, to the call-in number. So I will actually let you listen to the call so that you can hear her question. But her question is talking about massive battle and fight scenes when clients continually will do that same play from week to week, and just my thoughts on what that looks like and how to make sense of that. So I'll let you go ahead and listen to her question and then share some thoughts.
Hi, my name's Ariana, calling in from Atlanta. I'm an early career therapist with kids, finishing up my internship with a group that does play therapy. And I was wondering if you could talk about themes of battles and fights, scenes of big fights and battles. I have clients who over and over again will set up these battle scenes in the sand tray, often with the larger animals. Or I have another client who will sometimes do this with the play soldiers. He's a little older. And then almost every session, they'll act out these battles and with varying degrees of aggression, have the figures fighting each other and dying, with some nuance with or variation with what actually will go on between the characters. But there's always a fight and there's always a battle, and all of the characters die. Thank you so much. I really enjoy your podcast, and my team of other interns are really enjoying it as well. Thank you.
All right. So it's always fascinating when we see consistent play week to week to week in a child. And we talk about that, right? So one of the things that we document is the repetition. So sometimes it's the repetition of the use of a specific toy. Sometimes it's the repetition of a theme, or sometimes it's the repetition of play, or any combination of all three of those. So Ariana, thank you so much for the call. Thank you for presenting this. And this is always interesting because these are the types of clients and the types of cases where we often see shifts in very meaningful ways. Because when we see a child do the same thing repetitively every single week, when they finally are able to make a shift, it's super obvious to us and it's readily observable. So if it's been pretty consistent several weeks in a row and all of a sudden something changes, that variation is much more noticeable and pronounced because there's been consistency in the theme. So let's talk about different ways to interpret this. And obviously, Ariana, your examples were that sometimes it's the large animals, sometimes it's soldiers, and the battles have varying degrees of aggression, but they are constantly fighting, and then there's death at the end. Well, it's interesting to pay attention to what is happening in that play narrative. Even if the child is not talking, I want to make it clear, narrative doesn't always have to be verbal. You still want to be very aware of what's happening and what is being created. So a child is 100% working through things, making sense of things, processing things, healing as he or she is continuing the same battle every single week. So it's up to us then to be a little bit interpretive. And I use that word carefully and loosely because I don't want to give off the impression that we have to, as a child-centered play therapist, interpret what's happening in the child's play. We don't. Remember, we use themes because it helps us articulate to parents in consultations. We watch shifts in play because it helps us see where the child is. We monitor things to see stages and phases, to watch the acquisition of the universal outcomes. There are things that we monitor and we pay attention to, but we don't have to interpret or analyze what's going on. Sometimes we can't. Sometimes as child-centered play therapists, we have no idea what a child is making sense of, why they're playing something out. There's nothing we can connect it to. There's nothing that makes sense based on history that we know of. And the child just does it, and they're working on something, and it's important to them, even when we don't have any context for it. So I want to be careful to make sure when I say we're interpreting and analyzing what's happening, it's not because we have to put a label on it. It's just to keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening. So often, I'm going to go through five options of what we'll often see in battle and fight scenes, and then maybe that will help you narrow it down, and all of us as listeners, we might have a better handle on what it can mean as a child is playing out a massive battle scene week to week. So the easiest one to go to is power and control, right? Because when you have two teams, two sides battling each other, almost always one has power or control over the other, or at least one is trying to have power and control. So typically, we can very readily pick out power and control because usually one side has the advantage or in some way has more leverage than the other. I can't tell, Ariana, in your call if you mentioned that both sides, everyone dies, or if it's just one side, they die. So I'm not really sure. But if you can clearly see that one side has the advantage or leverage or is somehow given any sense of control over the other, that's an easy thing to sort out. Another option is dominance. Often when there are battle scenes, that is the way that a child communicates need for dominance or creation of dominance. In other words, one side, one team is dominating the battle and it kind of sways everything in their favor. So if you need absolute authority and absolute dominance, it's very closely tied to power and control, as you can see, but you would definitely have the sense of one dominating the other. So that's another option to consider. Often battle scenes are means to an end. And you may not see that yet, but let me help you understand what I mean by that. A battle, fight, any kind of conflict between two sides, two people, two sets, there's usually a shift that takes place at some point where that was the means to a new end. So maybe a hero emerges. Maybe all of a sudden someone survives. Maybe someone comes back from the dead and they weren't actually killed at all. Maybe they decide they're not going to fight anymore and they join the same side. Maybe there's a traitor and they expose the traitor. If you wait and you give it time, you will almost always see something unfold as a means to an end. So the consistent battling and fighting lends itself toward a shift that's meaningful and therapeutic. It could sometimes be everyone has to die many, many, many weeks in a row, and then for the first time ever, an army medic shows up and starts healing people. So rescue, saving, protection, hero, all of those can sometimes be the end that we finally get to over time. So means to an end is definitely a consideration as well. Also, sometimes it's just about destruction. And as I mentioned, I can't tell if you were implying that everybody in the whole battle dies or just everyone on one side dies. But if it is everyone in the whole battle dies, so both sides are completely obliterated and wiped out, it could very much be a destruction theme. So the battle really is not so much about the battle. It's that the battle is what creates the destruction. Decimation and destruction is very powerful in play therapy. So if everything gets destroyed, everything gets ruined, everything gets wiped out, that destruction piece is a very powerful component of a child's work. Because what do you do when everything gets destroyed or ruined or, you know, is in some state of upheaval? You either start from scratch or you rebuild it or you fix it or you repair it or something, right? So that goes back to means to an end, as you can see. And you mentioned, Ariana, that sometimes there's varying degrees of aggression. So my fifth thought is often battle and fight scenes are really just the way that a child demonstrates aggression in third person. So rather than being first person aggressive, where the child comes into the room and punches Bobo, for example, they can create a battle in the sand or a battle scene that allows characters to be aggressive toward each other. And we can still count that as aggressive play, even though it's characters instead of the child, him or herself. So those are five thoughts that I had when I was, you know, listening to your question. And keep in mind, kind of as a related aside, often when a child consistently plays out the same kind of scenario as this, battles, fights, you know, it's almost the same kind of dialogue every single week, I often will map that as perpetual fill in the blank. So that might be perpetual danger. If one side is always without weapons, for example, or always under attack, for example, perpetual danger. I might mark it as perpetual conflict. So every single time the child plays, there's a massive conflict. And it sounds as though that's the case in your scenario, Ariana. Or perpetual chaos. If everything is completely chaotic in this battle, perpetual chaos is a noteworthy element as well. So just to kind of keep in mind, when you see that repetitive nature and there's no resolution yet, because it's one thing if we're seeing this battle every single week, but there's shifts. If everything is consistent and there's not really much change and there isn't really much improvement or, you know, movement, growth, anything, I typically mark that in my notes as perpetual whatever. And that's very reflective of how the child feels and where the child is. Often that is outwardly reflective of internal feelings. So if a child feels that their world is perpetually chaotic, they recreate that in their play. If they feel that there's perpetual conflict in their life, they create that in play. If there's perpetual danger, perpetual peril, they will recreate that in play. Now, that's not to say that the child is stuck. It's not to say the child can't get out of that. We just have to be patient because the child will keep it there until they feel that they have the internal fortitude and they're willing and able to shift it to rewrite their narrative. That's what the child-centered process affords, right? They can rewrite their story. They can rewrite their narrative. They can change the ending. But often that takes a while because if the child still feels those things internally, they're not ready to enact change yet. So Ariana, thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for the question. And I'm so grateful that you spent the time to share your thoughts with us. I hope that everyone found that helpful. And as always, we are in the business of seeing the value of letting kids do exactly what they need to do. So if it's a battle scene every single week, we give them the space and the freedom and the relationship in which to do that. If it's pummeling Bobo every single week, we give them the space and freedom and relationship. If it's not speaking a word to us for an entire hour, week after week after week, we talked about that in the collective this week. What do we do when a child says nothing in the entire session, even though it's not a selective mutism issue, it's not an inability to speak? How do we handle that? We handle it the same way we handle any child, with unconditional love, unconditional acceptance, the be with attitudes, which are what? Give me five. There you go. I'm here. I hear you. I understand. I care. And I delight in you. And the end goal is that the child has the time, the tools, and the opportunity to do the work that they need to do within the therapeutic relationship, within the therapeutic environment. So Ariana, keep letting your little ones do battle scenes because they're working and you're providing the space in which they can work. So I hope that you're proud of that and I hope that encourages you. If you have a question, if you would like me to answer something you've been thinking about, I would love to hear from you. So you can either email me at brenna@thekidcounselor.com or you can call 813-812-5525. I look forward to hearing from you all. I'm so grateful for you. Thank you for your feedback on the story, on Nathan's story. So many of you have said how impactful that was and how meaningful that was. And that was what my hope was. It certainly impacted me. So if you have a story, I know I'm kind of throwing you a new curveball here, but if you have a story, I would love to hear it. So shoot me an email, call me and give me your phone number and I'll call you, whatever you think is helpful. I would love to hear your stories. I'd love to share more of those, maybe like a monthly feature of how CCPT has changed you and the impact that it's had on your life and your career and your world. So if you would like to share one of your child-centered stories, I'd love to hear it. So you can reach me those same ways to do that as well. All right, y'all. Hope you have a great week. Thanks for being with me. Love you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.